This podcast of the Pat Campbell Show is powered by the law offices of John M. Dunn.
It is 8:05, 5 past the hour, third and final hour of the program. This is it. This is the cage match. Much awaited and anticipated throwdown between Dr. Everett Piper from Oklahoma Wesleyan University and Rollo Tomasi, the rational male. Let me bring Rollo up. Rollo, are you there, buddy?
Yeah, good morning, Pat. How are you?
I'm doing well. And
so are you implying I'm the irrational male?
No, well.
Is that where we're going
we'll
here?
We'll walk through this.
Okay.
But Carly's got something special to kick off our show on marriage. Go ahead.
Marriage.
Oh, there it is.
Marriage is what brings us together today. Marriage, that blessed arrangement, that dream within a dream.
All right, that's perfect. Tell everybody what you said about when I said I was going to play that clip, Dr.
Well, you have to tell them what the clip is.
It's from The Princess Bride.
And you asked me.
Have you ever watched The Princess Bride?
And I said, absolutely. I've got boys. I said, absolutely not. I have boys. I'm not going to watch some girly movie.
Oh, man.
And I'm surprised. I am shocked that you watch this. Oh. You need to go get an injection of testosterone. You don't have enough.
When my second oldest daughter got married, they asked me to do the readings at church, right? And during the rehearsal dinner, that is exactly what I did from the pulpit.
Is that right?
Exactly that thing.
Shame.
She says, if you do that, you won't do that tomorrow.
Shameful.
Shameful. Shameful. Shameful. I need more testosterone.
I agree with your mother. Are you losing your faith?
There we go. Here we go. All right. So, I'm getting a bad feeling already. This is going to be about me and not about the topic.
Oh, yes.
So, all right. So what we're going to talk about today is, should men get married? Serious question. Is there still a place for traditional marriage in 2019? What's in it for the guys? Or is it, as Roller will say here, a zero-sum game, all responsibility, no authority? We're going to talk about it. And Roller, I want to start with you. You're married. You've been married for 23 years. Obviously, it's working for you. What's changed here in 2019? Would you encourage a young guy to consider getting married in 2019? Why or why not?
All right. Well, there's a few things we got to clarify here. First is, I'm not against marriage as an institution. Okay, obviously where we are in society today has been built upon a monogamous arrangement. Okay, whether that's Christian, Southeast Asian or what, there's lots of definitions of marriage, just as you guys were saying before. People have been getting married for, ages, ever since, post or pre-agrarian times, people have been, men and women have been getting married. I see the success of where we are for society as a result of that monogamous arrangement. So just to clear the air here, I'm not against marriage as an institution. I think that as it is done today, since the sexual revolution, the institution of marriage has become corrupted and has become something that is not worthwhile for most guys to enter into, because it's become something that is more of a liability for the guy than it is for the woman right now. And what I think we've done is we've empowered women to the point where we're still using an old social contract for our ideas of marriage, but we're insisting on a new social contract for today's idea of marriage. I 100% agree with Dr. Piper about how we have changed the fundamental definition of what marriage is, particularly when it comes to same-sex marriage. As far as same-sex marriage is concerned, people like to say it's gay marriage. It's not gay marriage. It is same-sex marriage. So technically, two heterosexual men could get together and get married and be married in the eyes of the state. It's just that their arrangement between those two guys is that they are going to go out and seek, female partners and still be married. So from the perspective of the state, it's just a contract. It's just a business arrangement between two individuals right now, and that's how we got to the point where we're at right now. But because of that business arrangement, it's based on whatever the contractual arrangement is between the man and the woman, or between the man and the man, or between the woman and the woman right now. And as far as the state is concerned, they only care about the arrangement or the contract between the two of you. So if your contract is, okay, I am going to be faithful to you, forsaking all others, and that's going to be the terms of our agreement, well, what is going to be the terms of breaking that agreement, and what is going to be the consequences for breaking that agreement? And right now, because of the way that we've structured our divorce laws, the way we've structured the Duluth model of feminism, because of the way that we have changed things both societally and contractually, we're holding men to an old school responsibility and liabilities and accountabilities that were in every way relevant prior to the sexual revolution. After the sexual revolution, we have empowered women to the point where marriage in this day and age is no longer something that is, certainly not advantageous to men, but it is not, it is, I would say, even detrimental to guys getting into this situation in the way that it is right now. So what I'm saying is that I'm married. People ask me this all the time. They'll say, well, Rollo, you know, you talk as if you are anti-marriage all the time, but yet you yourself are married. And I have by pretty much anybody's definition, a very good, religious-based marriage with my wife right now. And so people will say, well, how can you talk about, the way that you talk about marriage? You're discouraging men from getting married. And the reason I'm discouraging men from getting married is not because marriage is a bad idea per se, but how we do it today is a zero-sum game. It has very little, I should say, it has all downside for men and all upside for women at this stage.
All right, I'm going to let Dr. Piper respond to that. And then when I get back to you, I want you to, you use an example of a business arrangement. I want to get into that next. But Dr. Piper, mm-hmm. Floor is yours.
What's the time here?
No, you just go ahead.
Rollo's followed your strategy here. He uses all the time, and then I get 30 seconds to respond.
No, you got plenty of time. Go.
Come on.
You got plenty of time. We're going to the 20. Go ahead.
Right. Go ahead.
No, Rollo, I actually, there's a lot of what you said that has great value. And here's where I'm going to say that I think we agree on this, and you can respond and say, well, no, you misrepresented me. But I think here's where we agree. Marriage as defined by God is good. Marriage as defined by the government is compromised. We're talking about the difference between a contract and a covenant. I'll say that again, a contractual relationship or a covenantal relationship. Or the difference between business dealings and just grandeur and beauty. So there are some differences here that I think we need to clarify as people listen to us in terms of defining what marriage is. In God's scheme, in God's economy, marriage has always been covenantal. It is not contractual. And the difference between a covenant and a contract is this. Contracts are about what I can get. Contracts are for a limited period of time. Contracts imply an if you do this, then I will do that mentality. Contracts are motivated by my desire to actually get something out of this relationship, whereas a covenant is initiated for the benefit of the other person. A covenant is selfless, whereas a contract attends to the self. Covenants are relationships that are permanent. Covenants are based on forgiveness and repentance, and they endure. So God's covenant with me is not temporary. God's covenant is permanent. God's covenant, Christ's covenant with me, is something that he does for me. He doesn't do it for himself. He doesn't need me. And the marriage that is defined by Christ and is defined from Genesis to Revelation, the covenantal relationship, the biblical relationship, the definition that we're given for the last 3,000 to 4,000 years of what marriage should be ideally, and this is the ideal, is that it is for the other person, not for myself. It's not a zero-sum game. And I'd like to confront that a little bit here, too.
Let me just jump in real quick, and I know I want to keep myself to a minimum.
Yeah.
What you just said there, that was beautiful. I've never heard it described like that. But it's what you're talking about, the ideal, the covenant, that's what it's supposed to be. But it hasn't been that for a long time.
Okay, so that's a fair response.
Okay.
Because, okay, that all sounds beautiful, that's idealistic, but what the heck, nobody really has that today.
Well, I don't say nobody has it, but very few have it.
I'm not going to concede that.
Okay.
I'm going to suggest that a lot more people have it than we're giving credit to in this conversation. Is it ideal? Is it perfect? I don't know anybody that has a perfect relationship. I don't know anybody that has perfect faith, We all have questions. We all have chinks in our armor. We all stumble. We all fall. And that's why God's covenant to us means something. Our stumbling and our failure doesn't mean he breaks the covenant, because it's not for him, it's for us. And we're told in Ephesians by the Apostle Paul that the marriage covenant is supposed to reflect the marriage between Jesus Christ and his body, the church. And we're shown the roles between men and women within that covenant, within the body of Christ, and that Jesus Christ's marriage to the church for eternity will reflect what we're showing in our relationship and our testimony to the world as we're married. Now, do we succeed ideally? Absolutely not. But is it something I'm going to concede the high ground of that ideal and say, we've all screwed it up, so I'm just going to concede the high ground and say we're going to go to a contractual idea of marriage right now rather than a covenantal one, and we're going to go to this zero-sum game mentality. By the way, I think zero-sum economics, that's the Democratic, the socialist view of economics, that there's only one pie and we're going to get our limited slices of the pie, so let's fight for as much as we can get. And I think it's bad marriage, too. Because in economics, if you're a capitalist and a free enterprise person, you believe you can create more, that there's exponential gain through your creativity as an entrepreneur. Therefore, you can get more. It's not just a limited pie. And I believe the same is true for marriage. It's not that I'm just going to get my slice of the pie of marriage. This beauty of coming together as one creates the opportunity to create more. There's exponential gain as the result of the marriage covenant.
Well, I was just going to say, first of all, is that I agree with pretty much saying right now, and I told Pat this before we even came on, is that I know that you're going to argue this point from a religious perspective, because that's the only that's who you are, and I respect that. But what I was going to say is that right now, in Western-style marriage, it is women that are initiating 70% of the divorces. It is women that are viewing marriage not as a covenant but as a contract right now. It is a protection or an insurance policy against breaking that covenant, against breaking that contract. And I think probably what we're going to get, what we're going to end up getting down to here, is that it is it's who is going to respect the fact that it is a covenant or whether it is a contract at this point. Because right now, from an objective perspective right now, getting into that contract as we view it as a contract is a downside contract for a guy.
Yeah, so, I want to talk about the business. I'm looking at the clock here, too. Real quick here, an observation. And when I said the covenant is ideal, I didn't mean that in a condescending way. I think Dr. Piper brought up a very important point here, the difference between guys, men and women. Okay, I think most women, their natural inclination is to say, what can I do for this man? If they're not poisoned by feminism, what can I do? What can I bring to this? Okay. And I think guys, I think we tend to be selfish. We think about, what do I get? That's what Rollo's bringing up with this. So I think that's an important distinction that you brought up there. I think a woman is more likely to go with the covenant than a guy is, because guys tend to be selfish.
Well, let me respond. Rollo has data, so I'm assuming, Rollo, it's your data. I haven't read it, but I'm trusting you on this. And the divorces are initiated by women because they want to break the contract. True, my advice to the men as they're dating and courting, I'll use that word that sounds old-fashioned, but it implies more seriousness about actually a relationship as to whether or not it's going to end in marriage, permanent marriage or not, the courtship. If men, if it's true that 70% of divorces are initiated by women, then you better be pretty darn careful on who you're dating and who you're courting, and evaluate that during that process so that you do not marry one of those women that is going to break the contract over superficial things. Pat, one of the things that you said, and I think you need to take a break here. One of the things that you said...
tell me what to do, how to run my show.
Well,
come on.
I'm in your studio here.
Go ahead.
The implication that never what's your deal where you said that the advice you have to your boys, never tell anybody that there's no way you're going to get divorced?
No, when we were talking about divorce last week, this is where, because I asked you, I said, were you disappointed in me? I said, because my mother is, right? If I've got three daughters, okay, if you find a guy out there that tells you up front, divorce, I said, grab him, he's gold, okay? With boys, I've got two boys, you tell a lady that, okay, up front, You're telling me you can do anything. You can do anything you want, and there's nothing you can do that will make me divorce you.
Well, you've got a double standard for your boys.
Just turn the keys over to the wife.
Yeah, but okay. So anyway,
I got to pause. No, there you go. You get to respond. Hold on. Just hold your horses. We'll be back with more. Quick break. Back with more of the debate here. All right, we are back. Dr. Everett Piper, Oklahoma Wesleyan University, Rollo Tomasi, the Rational Male. And I started this conversation about divorce, and I'll really quickly use just an example I used with Rollo on the podcast this past Sunday. Imagine, if you would, you get out of high school, you're 18 years old, you go and you get a job at American Airlines. They tell you up front, Pat, there's nothing you can ever, ever do that will get you fired here. You can steal, you can cheat, you can not show up for work. It doesn't matter what you do, we're never going to fire you. What kind of an employee would I be?
Well, again, I know where you're going with this. And what you just described is a business contract.
Right.
And business contracts are different than religious covenants. And Rollo suggested earlier that he knew I would respond from a religious perspective. Well, of course I am, because marriage is a religious concept. Marriage is defined by the church. It's not defined by the state. Our culture has allowed the state to co-opt the issue of marriage and dumb it down to a contractual discussion rather than elevating it to the beauty of a covenantal commitment. So, yeah, my employer has the right to fire me because it's a contract, and I am obligated to do certain things because he expects to get something out of me. That's normal, that's moral, that's right. But a marriage is more beautiful and more permanent to that because it is a covenant. It is defined by God. It is defined by the Bible. It is not defined by the church, by the state, and we've allowed it to be co-opted and dumbed down. Now, with regard to the permanency of marriage, I know that you suggested that, as you said earlier, that I'm going to turn down. Sorry, I'm getting noise off my computer here.
Rollo, are you still there?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Go,
let me be quick here and give Rollo a chance. I would disagree with you, Pat. I think the best advice I've ever heard given to my Oklahoma West is when a local executive from Tulsa, one of the most prominent companies in Tulsa, came to give a seminar. He and his wife came to give a seminar to our business students. I thought the conversation was going to be on entrepreneurship, and it was a little bit, but they immediately shifted over to their relationship, their marriage. And as very wealthy people, they had covetable conflicts in marriage where they were ready to call it quits. Mm-hmm. Was the guy married to the company or was he married to his wife? These types of conversations. Right. And they looked my students in the eye and they said the best advice we ever got during our premarital counseling was when our priest or our pastor looked us in the eye and asked this question. Before you get married, I want to ask you this. Is there anything whatsoever that your future spouse could do that would cause you to get a divorce? And there was a pause as this wealthy couple talked to my students. And they looked at my students and they said, at that point, in our naivete, we looked at our pastor and our priest and we said, no, nothing. And then they said to our kids, we can tell you that that promise, that covenantal promise, saved our marriage because we were definitely ready to call it quits. But we fell back on that promise that there was nothing, love for company, love for finance, love for money, love for prosperity and success, nothing that would compromise our marriage. And therefore, we're stronger for it today. That's covenantal. That's not contractual.
All right, Rollo, yours.
I was just going to say, first of all, I understand the difference between the covenantal side of things and the contractual side of things. The problem is today is that the covenantal side of this whole thing is dead. And because it's dead, we lean over onto the contractual side. So what this entire argument is going to, or debate, whatever, is going to entail is going to be whether or not you are it comes back to the no true Scotsman logical fallacy. It's like, you're not a real Christian. You're not a real covenantal believer in marriage if it doesn't meet the particular definition of whatever it is that you're saying. The problem is right now is that because we see things as a contract, that makes it a bad deal for guys. So when we talk about it from, like we were just saying right before the break, is like, well, the best thing to do is when you're courting, you're dating, whatever, is to vet that woman for to find out what her attitudes are towards marriage at that time. Well, the problem is that those attitudes can change over the course of the marriage, especially when there are incentives for women to get divorced, when they can leave that, destroy the marriage on a moment notice and leave that marriage with cash and prizes. They can leave the marriage with the children that the man believes is his. The thing is even if this is a covenantal idea, the problem is that we have contractual agreements or contractual arrangements in that marriage that can destroy a man's life and destroy a man's faith, destroy a man's entire, you know, his entire life, really, because it's not because the guy made a bad decision with marrying that particular woman. It's because her ideas of what that marriage is changed. The other thing I was going to say is that when it comes to whether or not divorce is on the table or if it's not on the table, it wasn't, you correct my scripture here if I'm wrong, but wasn't it a stipulation that Jesus Christ himself said that if a other than marital infidelity, divorce was supposed to be off the table? So does that not also make it contractual? There's that. And then there's the other part where the Apostle Paul also said it is better for man not to marry. So those are religious questions.
Yeah. I'm going to send that over to Dr. Piper. We've got about a minute before we go to the break, and I'll give you more time on the other side. Go.
I'll respond to the scriptural references quickly. Yes, it is true that Jesus said it was because of the hardness of your heart that God actually started permitting some context for divorce. And then he made it clear that aside from marital infidelity, divorce was not biblical, not God-ordained. So Jesus did put a crack in the door if somebody abandons the faith. And then we can talk about the Apostle Paul's perspective on that, and I'll answer that question after the break.
More coming up on the other side. You're listening to the Pat Campbell Show here on Talk Radio 1170, where Tulsa comes to talk and Oklahoma comes to listen. Stay tuned. 8:36, 36 past the hour. Pat Campbell Show here on Talk Radio 1170, where Tulsa comes to talk. If you're just tuning in, we're talking about marriage and whether or not men should get married. A serious question, is there still a place for traditional marriage in 2019, joined in studio by Dr. Everett Piper from Oklahoma University, and on the phone by Rollo Tomasi, the rational male. And let me pot Rollo up here. Rollo, you still with me?
Yeah. Okay.
And Dr. Piper wanted to comment on the St. Paul deal. So mention that, and then we'll get Rollo back in.
Rollo asked the question with regard to Paul's admonition. I believe it's in Corinthians, 1 Corinthians, if I recall correctly, where he says, "If it's better that all of you do as I do," which meant that he was celibate, that he was not married. And my response to that is, yes, Paul did say that. Obviously, it's scriptural. It's an admonition that Paul gives, so we need to take it seriously. The question is, why did he say it, and how did he live it? Well, he said it because he was 100% totally given over to service to the church, to the body of Christ. He was living an asexual life. If you want to look at the Catholic Church's model with the priest, for example, the priest is not to get married. The priest is to remain celibate. I asked Pat if I was correct in my theology on this or my understanding of church tradition on this, and I think he kind of acknowledged yes, and that is the priest is supposed to be the model of asexual 100% commitment to the body of Christ, service to the church, and in doing so, he sets aside his sexual life, and he sets aside marriage. So if people want to use Paul as an example, then fine, go at it, do it, but you better do it as Paul did it, and that is 100% asexual commitment to Christ and nothing else.
And I think when we talk about MGTOWs, men going their own way, they're not celibate. They're still acting out sexually. It's just not with women. So Rollo, picking up on that point.
Okay, well, I was just going to say that's in 1 Corinthians 25 through like 39 or something like that. And I understand what you're saying there. I kind of figured that's the direction you were going to go with it, because it means a dedication to your service to religion. But I think what a lot of guys are doing right now, particularly in the MGTOW circles, are trying to find sort of common ground with religion to justify their enforced celibacy. I don't want to say it's voluntary or it's involuntary or whatever, but I see a lot of guys trying to find sort of common ground there. But in that, what they're trying to say is that they're trying to cross that over into what it is that they are doing, which means that if you are going your own way, if you are living, I understand where you're going to go with this. It's like, you know, living your life for yourself or living your life for God. They're living their lives for themselves, but they can better focus what it is that they're doing in their lives on whatever it is, because they're not distracted with acting with a wife. They're not distracted with trying to put that together. But one thing that I wanted to get into as far as that scripture is concerned.
Rollo, can I? I want to give you the latitude here, but I've just got to insert here. There's a huge difference between what you described, at least what I think I heard you describe, in terms of these guys that are MGTOWN. which is totally selfish, self-gratification, self-focused. I'm just going to do my own thing sexually, and I'm not going to be distracted by a woman, versus what the Apostle Paul is advocating, and that is total selflessness, and you're given over in an asexual way. You set it aside. There's no gratification, no self-pursuit. It's only the pursuit of Christ. Monstrous difference.
Yeah. I get that. Once again, we're coming back to the to the differences here between religion and the secular understanding of all this. The objective understanding thing there is, or what MGTOWs are saying here is that there is there's a need for authority to go along with that responsibility, because even the Apostle Paul here is saying that the man has authority over the woman, and this is what I wanted to ask you here is. Is that still a part of that covenant? Is it still a part of the covenant where the man has authority over the woman? Because right now, in a contractual sense, responsibility is all there is, and there is 0% authority. So when a woman gets into that, well, whether it's covenantal or it's contractual, that woman gets into that situation, and she has all of the authority there because she's backed up by the state that says, if you decide to, if divorce is an option for you, at any time you can self-detonate this marriage and you can walk away from this marriage with cash and prizes. So what is the incentive, again, for a guy to get into that, whether it's covenantal or it is contractual? The incentives are always that it's going to be a downside sacrifice for that guy to enter into that. Like I was talking to Pat about this before. It's like, would you get into a business deal where if I was going to start a business with you and I said, okay, you're going to put up 90% of the equity of the business. I'm going to put up, I can leave at any time I want to. In fact, I'm going to leave probably 100% of the time anyways. But if I quit, you are still contractually obligated to keep paying my salary no matter what it is. And in fact, if you make more money doing what we are doing here, you're going to pay me proportionally to whatever it is that you're making. Basically, what this is, it's a business arrangement that is an all downside business arrangement. Mm-hmm. And would you enter into that business arrangement with somebody if you knew going into that arrangement that that was going to be the deal? Now, what happens is because it's contractual, because of what, even if you want to say it's covenantal.
The court's always looking at it as contractual.
The court doesn't care whether or not you think of it as covenantal or contractual. They only care about who's getting the money at the end of the day. So why would a guy want to enter into that? And what is and is there any biblical reason why a woman would have any authority over the man?
Yours.
I thought you were flagging that you wanted to take a break. Multiple questions there, Rollo, so I'm going to have to deal with one at a time, and I'm not ignoring others, it's just that I'm going to have to deal with...
Right. Tackle one, and then I'll go into the break.
Okay, let's deal with the authority question. Rollo, I believe you asked,
the husband has authority over the woman.
I believe that that's biblical, yes. I don't believe in radical egalitarianism. I don't believe that that's biblical. I don't believe that's healthy. I do believe in complementarianism.
Stop for a minute. This is what he says every week.
We definitely agree on that.
Right. In other words, you believe in I believe in masculinity and femininity.
Yeah. We're better together than we are apart.
Exactly. And we get back to the exponential gain of marriage, and that's why God says the two shall become one. And when you become that one, that exponential gain of femininity and masculinity coming together in a new creation actually is a bit of a reflection of Trinitarian theology, because it's something new in community that God has in community within his own Trinitarian reality, where there's community and conversation within God himself. You see a minor reflection of that in marriage, another hint of eternity that God gives us in marriage. So, Rollo, I agree with you that complementarianism is better than egalitarianism. I agree with that.
Stop on that note. I'm going to pick it up on that. Quick break, back with more. It is 8:46, 46 past the hour. Back with Dr. Piper from Oklahoma Wesleyan University and Rollo Tomasi, the Rational Male. We're talking about marriage, and Dr. Piper, I cut you off. You were going to make a second point. You're responding to some of the things that Rollo just brought up.
Well, the question of authority, and this is really a bombshell today. You know it, Rollo. I know it. Pat, you know it. Anytime a male suggests that the Bible teaches that the man should have authority in the marriage relationship, all hell breaks loose. Everybody loses their mind. You have to define authority. What does that mean? Well, Paul himself makes it very clear in Ephesians. His letter to the Ephesians, he tells us what the marriage relationship is supposed to look like. And yes, he says the woman, the wife, is supposed to be subservient to the man, the husband. And yes, he says that the husband is to have authority over the wife and the family. But what does he mean? He defines it. The husband is to have authority over the wife as Christ loves the church unto the point of death. So again, yes, men, you are supposed to have authority, but are you supposed to lord it over your kids and your wife in a domineering fashion that's arrogant and self-serving? Absolutely not. As Christ loved the church, he gave himself to the church to the point of death. That's the definition of authority. But you can't have two steering wheels in the car. You can't have two bulls in the pen. You can't have two bosses at the place you work at all. Digresses to chaos. Somebody has to lead, and I believe in the complementary, and butchered that pronunciation, the complementarian aspect of marriage, and I think that's why it's beautiful rather than just government defined. Government defines it as an egalitarian contract. The church defines it as a complementarian covenant.
Rollo.
First off, I have a couple of questions. Maybe this is a better question, though, is do you think today that there should be a separation? Should there be some kind of new arrangement where if a man and a woman want to get together, that there should be some new type of marriage between a man and a woman that is set apart from the state right now? Like, should there be some kind of, like, we're going to be married, but we're not going to be on the books. We're going to be married today, but we're not going to have to, we're not going to have a marriage certificate. We're not going to have some sort of contractual arrangement. Do you think that that would be a better idea today to separate the covenantal side of things from the contractual side of things?
Wow, that's an interesting question. My gut reaction is I'm not going to concede the battle just because we think we're losing. I just don't act that way about anything. Pat and I talked off air. I expect my boys to listen to me. I expect them to hold this high ideal for their marriages or their future marriages. I expect this of myself, and I believe my wife expects it of herself and of me. Is our marriage perfect? No. Do we believe in this ideal and are we committed to it? Yes. Are we going to teach it to our children and our grandchildren? Yes. If we're the last people on earth that believe this and are practicing this and are reaching for this ideal, then I'm not up. So no, I'm not going to concede this degradation of a beautiful covenantal concept that God has given us to the government or to culture, even though I may be in the minority.
There, you know what? There was a lot of talk. Remember during the whole gay marriage thing, same-sex marriage, there was a lot of talk about Christians pulling out of getting the government piece of paper and just going back to the church because you don't want their interference in your covenant marriage.
And I understand that, and I understand the temptation to say, well, let culture go to hell in a handbasket. I don't care. We're going to have it right within my little community, my little convent, my little cloistered group is going to have it right. In fact, there's, who is it? Is it Rod Dreher that's arguing for the Benedict option out there, which is kind of removing yourself in such a way and doing it right within your own little Christian communities. I get it. I understand that sometimes that's been necessary. I guess my personal orneriness and stubbornness says I'm not going to concede the battle. I'm going to fight you rather than give in.
I want to get into this role, the myth of the quality woman. People say that you got to find from a guy's perspective, you just got to find the right woman, the quality girl out there. Respond to that, and I'll let Dr. Piper in on that one.
Yeah, well, first of all, when I talk about the myth of the quality woman, what I'm saying is that women are always women, no matter whether you think that they're quality or they're not. Okay, there is a base nature of women that is always going to stay the same. All women are going to be hypergamous. All women are going to be trust women to be women. You and I were talking about this on my podcast. Can you trust women? Yes, you can trust women to be women. You can trust women to be to act according to whatever their base nature is. So when guys say, oh, she's different, she's a quality woman, usually what that means to me is a guy has this idealistic notion about what that woman is really all about. What they don't understand is that that woman can go feral at a moment's notice. And we encourage women to do that today. We encourage women to say, you know what, you can live as a quote-unquote quality woman all you want to, but don't worry about it because the government has your back, because the state has your back. And that's what I was saying with Dr. Piper here, is that although you want to have it sounds to me like you want to have a covenantal marriage and you want to have a also still remain within the contractual side of things or with a state recognized things, you just want to change things up a little bit. Well, what happens is then you start to depend on what you think your impression is of your wife or what you think your impression is of your marriage. And that's all fine and great until that marriage becomes tested. Until the point where something comes up where that resistance to your authority crops up. And then when that happens, you are the one that has no power in that state. You are the one where she can say, I have the full force of the government behind me right now. I don't have to listen to what you have to say. I don't care if you think I'm your perfect Christian wife. I don't care if you think that I'm a quality woman. Mm. It doesn't make any difference because I can always fall back on the big brother state right now. So
let me throw something in here real quick. There was a tweet I retweeted yesterday. It was apparently by a porn star out there. She says, once I'm done with porn, she says, I'm going to make somebody mm-hmm. a great husband. And you stop and think about it. In the church, if she confesses her sin, redeems herself, there's going to be people that welcome her in. But it's like, well, wait a minute. So you mean after you're done with all this other stuff? But I'll let you respond to him.
Talk about
that's a hard one to follow up on.
Talk about throwing me several curveballs here. Rollo, we've got limited time here, so I guess I just have to respond with a question. I don't know whether we got time to get into it or not. Maybe another show.
Got 4 minutes.
You said that women are women, and you can always trust women to act like women, and they're going to be inevitably they're going to resort or to their base inclinations and go feral. What do you mean by that?
He says not that they will, but they can.
They can.
They can. There's a big difference.
That's really the crux of the argument here is that it's not that every woman will; it's that any woman can. So even if you've married your perfect Christian wife, if at any time during that marriage she feels that she doesn't want to follow your lead, she doesn't want to be under your authority, you are the one with responsibility, and she's the one ultimately that has the authority in that marriage because she has the full force of the government behind her.
Again, I don't know what you mean by feral and base, and that's going to be a longer conversation. So I guess I have to respond by saying this. Every human being has base instincts and inclinations. Every human being is broken. Masculinity can be compromised. Femininity can be compromised. There's beauty in both, but there's also a brokenness in human nature that can result in both femininity and masculinity going rogue, I suppose. I don't want to get into criticizing women for going base and feral and not also saying men can do, bad things too. I'm not going to go there. What I would say is this. Marriage is a commitment. It is a covenant. I don't worry about my wife divorcing me because I know who she is. I don't worry about her walking out the door because she's mad at me, angry at me, and I have failed on a given day because the covenant is permanent. How do I know that? I just know that. I know my wife. The two have become one. I know her convictions. I know her commitment. I know her personality. I know her brokenness, and I know her beauty. And she would say all of the same of me. And therefore, the covenant will endure. Is that an exception in today's culture? Yep, it sure is. Do I want other people, especially my own boys and my potential and future grandchildren, to recognize that that exception is worth it? Yep, I do. Am I willing to concede that because government and culture has screwed the thing up dramatically, that we're going to just chuck the whole thing out the window and just go with a contractual understanding of what it means to come together, have sex, maybe have children, and then, hey, que sera, sera, if we want to move on to something else, break the covenant, contract and do so? Nope, I'm not ready to go there because I think the consequences of those ideas to culture, to kids, and to the future of a free society and free republic would be lost.
Rollo, got about a minute and a half. You get the last word.
Well, okay, I was going to say that's all very beautiful prose, but I can point you to dozens of guys who said exactly the same thing that you've said just right now. Is I just know that my wife would never do X, Y, and Z. And these are the same guys that are sitting in divorce court right now wondering why that wife turned on them, why that wife decided that she no longer wanted to be a part of that covenant anymore and is now relying on the contractual side of it to take their husband to the cleaner. You and I, Pat, we had that guy that came on who said
Stephen,
that
I told him about Stephen. His wife cheated on him four times.
Yeah,
she finally divorced him.
Times.
Yeah.
Yeah, she divorces him, and he's still, very much clinging to his faith. We're looking at him like he's crazy. Just to be able to say, I know what I know. Well, okay, I would like to believe that my wife would never cheat on me. I would like to believe that my wife would never want to divorce me. But at the end of the day, I know enough about the system, and I know enough about how we have corrupted marriage to the point where men have all the responsibility and women have 100% of the authority. And if you think that that's not the case, just go ask any guy that is in divorce court right now.
All right, gentlemen, I got to end on that note. We'll pick it up again another time. Thank you to both of you. Appreciate it. Stand by for Glenn Beck.
Sure.
Log on to talkradio1170.com to check out all of Pat Campbell's podcasts powered by the law offices of John M. Dunn.